It's hour number three of Shirts and Skins with Chad and Trey. We pick out the stems and seeds at 2:45. Looks like Urban Meyer's health issues may have been resolved. At 2:30, why does January 14th matter? Dress your pet up day, apparently, for all you lunatics who put clothing on animals. And in mere minutes, Steve Sarkisian lands a big fish on his coaching staff. I'm Trey Elling, and sitting across from me is Chad Hastings.
Hope you're doing well. Hour number three, in addition to the Urban Meyer stuff around Jacksonville, you've probably seen that. Looks like Alabama is going to go with Bill O'Brien as their new OC. They're kind of finalizing things there. And, of course, regionally in the NBA, the big story yesterday was sometimes you just got to cut the cancerous thing out. Even if it means you don't get as much as you think you can get or whatever. James Harden is no longer a Houston Rocket. I heard the guys yesterday on the Triple Option talking about the weird angle that in about 9 days, sometime later in January, a restaurant is going to open in Houston that is owned by James Harden. Wonder how that'll go.
Awkward.
Plus, Trey, I saw a story today where, this is beautiful marketing, a car wash in Houston was offering free car washes if you just drove up and gave them your James Harden jersey to throw away.
Oh, wow.
That's all you had to do. They just put it in a trash can and they washed your car.
I thought they were going to give you a car wash if you drove up and it's clear that you're like 30 or 40 pounds heavier than your playing weight.
How dare you? How dare you? And by the way, how dare whoever that Photoshop person was that took James Harden's head and put it on an old picture of Mark Henry's body? With the word Brooklyn on it.
That was incredible. I'm sorry. I love Mark Henry, but that was incredible.
How dare you for doing that? Don't you dare do that to the world's strongest man.
Did you text Mark to see how he feels about it?
No, I haven't done it yet. I'm a little scared to, honestly. I'm a little freaked out. Mark, if you're out there listening and you have a thought and would like to share, you can. But I don't need anybody taking a shot at the world's strongest man.
I feel like Mark's got a good sense of humor.
Oh, he's definitely got a good sense.
I appreciate that.
He's got a good sense of humor, but I'm just going to guess that at that moment, first of all, I would advise nobody even think about saying a word like that or making that joke to Mark Henry, like, ever. But at that moment, that's not Mark Henry wouldn't. I don't think Mark Henry would tell you he was like out of shape, overweight.
Oh no, he was burly.
He was Mark Henry.
Yeah, he's Mark Henry.
He was the world's strongest man, and I would say that's probably world's strongest man prime right there. All right, so we got all those stories floating out there, but we also have some Texas football and basketball to get into. We talked about the basketball loss earlier, first conference loss, and a lot of different things you could break down in this game, but in the end, Trey, just not enough. I really thought Texas was going to get enough from Andrew Jones to win this thing. I mean, 20 points. Yeah. He went 4 of 6 from beyond the arc.
He was good.
They kept hitting those threes and hitting those threes. And that part of it, if you tell me Texas was going to shoot, what was the final number? 52%? 52% from beyond the arc. I might have just not needed to hear anything else. Oh, I know Texas will win if they shoot 52% from beyond the arc. But, Trey, to me, there are two teams in this conference that Texas obviously lives in. That, and they're closer than Kansas, two teams that can handle the details and two teams that have proven that they are, you know, consistently badass, if you will, and that's Tech and Baylor. And last night was an opportunity for Texas fans to say, okay, Shaka at home coached his way past Chris Beard, but it didn't happen. Beard handled some of those details down the stretch a little better than Shaka's, you know, his crew handled it better than Shaka's crew did. And, you know, kid hit the shot. They set it up. Kid hit the shot. All credit to him.
Part of the reason why Texas did fail in the second half is because they were miserable inside the three-point line. They were 5 of 11 from three-point range in the second half, Chad. From two-point land, which is normally what has been buttering their bread recently, by the way. Whether they've been shooting well from the outside or not, they have been a very effective team from inside the arc. They made 3 2-point field goals in the second half.
Ugh.
3 out of 13.
The whole half?
3 out of 13 from the entire half. And part of that is skewed by the fact that Tech was essentially just trying to foul Jericho Sims when he was getting the ball, I think, at about the under 10-minute mark.
See, and that's where I was about to go. The tough thing for Texas is whether it's Sims or Jones, it felt like they, and even Greg Brown, they could go get the rebound. But it felt like one of a few things was going to happen, and it was never good for Texas. Either they weren't going to be able to get the putback to go, Because I just felt like they missed a lot of bunnies. Not absolute easy bunnies, but like contested bunnies.
Mm-hmm.
Or they'd foul and Texas wasn't hitting the free throws. So it was, they were getting those second opportunities, but just not doing enough with them. That's going to be some serious film study for those bigs, man. Those guys have got to do a more efficient job of maybe it's kick the ball back out and reset the possession, or just learn how to, you know, body usage, right? Learn how to use the body inside the lane, because Tech was able to bother them into misses, and obviously sometimes it was fouls, but there were a lot of misses up close.
And just a strange game, especially in the second half for the Texas guards. I know Andrew Jones was pretty good offensively, but those guys were out of sync with one another, as epitomized by that just needless sloppy turnover near the end of the game where Ramey and Coleman are trying a sort of handoff on the inbounds play. The Tech guy is right there. He reaches in, takes the ball, and then whips it to an open teammate underneath the basket for an easy two and tie ball game.
Yeah, there are so many. I agreed with the Fran Fraschilla comment last night. 5 second call's better than that.
Right. Or just throwing the ball down to the other end of the court.
There's a lot of things you could have done that would have been better there. But yeah, those are the kind of circumstances, even though you've had the lead, and they pointed out Texas to that point had been good this year in one score games, you got to figure out how to get out of that. You're up 77-75, and you are inbounding the basketball. You got to win that. 40 seconds to go. You have to win that game every time, no matter where you're playing it, but especially if you're playing it at your place, nobody's in the crowd, there's no distractions that way, you got to figure out how to close that door.
Is there a guy in college basketball right now who gets more NBA love without actually showing true, consistent productivity on the court more than Kai Jones? Look, I understand he is a freak for his size. He moves in a way that guys that are 6'11 are not supposed to do. Occasionally you see him hit a big three or do something really athletic, and you're enamored by the potential. But I also see a guy who's almost a waste of a spot on the court at times, too.
Yeah, there's a lot of love. You're right. There's a lot of love for him right now, and up to, what, 23, they're saying, of overall on draft prospects. I don't quite get that. But again, Trey, you're talking about, you look at this James Harden trade real quick, just to comment on basketball itself. The Rockets got Oladipo, the guy from Cleveland, Exum, the guy from Brooklyn, Karux, I guess is how you say it. But then essentially 8 first-round picks. Like, they got 3 first-rounders from Brooklyn.
8 first-round picks?
They got 4, essentially. They got 3 from Brooklyn, they got 1 from Cleveland, and then they got 4 first-round pick swaps in the deal. So I'm sure James Harden goes into this with his own ego thinking, man, it's badass. Look at that. Look at all that stuff they had to send back. James, that's not good. For all the basketball players that are taking your power, and I'm glad you're on your super teams, but if that doesn't tell you that your talent pool is drying up, I don't know what to tell you. Trey, just imagine in your mind for a second, pro football or pro baseball, what would have to go the other way if a team got essentially, just forget about the 8 for a second, 4 first-round picks? What do you have to send the other way if you're giving up, if you're getting 4 first-round picks in a trade? I mean, what
in
do you
pro
have,
football?
In pro football and pro baseball, what do you have to give up at that point?
For
like stock options?
For pro football, it would be at least a franchise quarterback and probably some first rounders the other way. I really don't know what that trade is. And in Major League Baseball, it's an impossibility because you can't trade players for draft picks as of right now.
That's
they may
true.
Change that at some point.
Dude,
but yeah, I mean, it takes an absurd amount. It takes so much, Chad, that it's hard to even fathom what it would take.
But
in the NBA, it's a possibility just because of how low value first-round draft picks are.
If I'm sending you 4 first-round picks in the NFL, you got to be sending me your quarterback and your left tackle, or I'm not even talking to you. We're not even talking until we can get to that point.
Here we are with basketball in 2021 now, and Kai Jones is projected as the number 23 overall pick, despite the fact that in a game last night against caliber competition, good defense, a fairly disciplined offense, he plays a little bit under 15 minutes, 1 of 2 from the field, 1 of 2 from the free throw line, 4 boards, and 3 fouls.
Right.
That's that's not going to cut it.
No, that's not. I mean, it's part of the big overall issue with basketball in general, but then with this team, it's just some of those things that need to tighten up. I will say, Trey, from a third-party observer, neither one of these dogs, or I didn't have a dog in the fight. I always root for Texas over Texas Tech, but neither of them are my team. I was entertained. I'll admit that. The chippiness, the you could feel an intensity with those two teams. Those two teams could have played in a Walmart parking lot. And you could have felt it, like McClung and that. I mean, there's an attitude about him. Somebody, apparently, the report came from the Irwin Center last night that when McClung let the shot go, he screamed out "game."
Confident.
There was a lot.
That was a big boy shot. We've seen Texas players hit big boy shots this year too.
We have, absolutely. So I like the energy on the floor and the. And here's the other thing, we talked about this before the show. The fact that Texas stayed that close. I'm not looking for moral victories overall, but if I'm a Texas fan, this may need to be a little bit of a progression. You can't necessarily ask to go from where you were to beating a team that was in the championship game not long ago instantly. The fact that you stayed that close, the fact that some of the stats are out of whack. We didn't mention bench scoring, 18-4 in favor of Texas Tech.
Mm.
But some of those are out of whack, and you still fought your ass off. Texas put up a fight in this game, Trey, that I don't think they would have necessarily a couple years ago, and maybe they should get credit for that, and can they build on that? Or am I just trying to come up with too many flowers here?
I appreciate you trying to see the silver lining here, but I'm sorry. I don't accept that. And Shaka Smart's fifth year with an upper-class laden team, one that's this talented, returning 100% of scoring, adding a five-star to the mix, showing the ability to get the job done like this, like you need to be better in a situation like that. Texas lost. I mean, I don't want to take anything away from Texas Tech because they did play better in the second half and they showed a ton of fight, but Texas lost that game as much as Texas Tech won it, period.
I could definitely understand that argument, and hopefully Texas will watch that film very carefully, look at the opportunities, and just look at – you know, not only self-scouting what you didn't do, but go look at what your opponent did. Go look at how Texas Tech did that and how they reeled you in from a 10-point deficit. Chris Beard's group looked composed, and that well-timed trap late in the game, that was beautiful. Out of nowhere. It was like you're walking in a mall, everything was cool, you got an Orange Julius, you got a pretzel, and all of a sudden somebody just throws a boa constrictor at you. And you had no idea it was coming, and Texas looked completely ill-equipped for that moment.
Honestly, if you had no idea, you have not been paying attention to Texas Tech since Chris Beard has been there. Because he's inclined to do things like that, so at least needs to be on those guys' radar. That's frustrating, as is the lack of drawn-up play at the end of the game, where you have 3 seconds left, you're down by two, so theoretically you can take a three to win the game. That's fine if you want to take a three, because you've been making threes better than twos in the second half, but you need to do something a little bit better than basically giving the ball off to Matt Coleman and letting him dribble up for a runner from Dame Lillard land as time is expiring. You throw that ball at least to half court and have something drawn up from there to where the guy receiving that first pass has the option of finding an open teammate on the wing, or perhaps there's somebody cutting to the basket to where you can try and get that easy two and force overtime.
What'd you think of the Fran Fraschilla idea to throw it to half court and call the timeout? Because you had 3 full seconds when they reset it. Maybe try to throw to half court, would get about 2 seconds and then get your timeout, then you could reset and go a throw in from half court?
Yeah, I think that would have been a good idea. That would have been a better idea versus what they ended up doing. They ended up using the timeout to have to go back to the drawing board one more time, right?
Yeah, they exactly.
No, Texas called the first timeout, and then Texas Tech called the second timeout.
Yeah, you kind of ended up with the same shot TJ Ford had against Oregon that year. And TJ didn't have near 3 seconds. Remember the shot he got off? He had a little floater. He actually got a pretty decent look in that one. That was a... Is that a Sweet 16 or a Round of 8 game?
But he got closer, didn't he?
He got closer, but yeah. I think he had less time. I mean, there was not much time, as I recall it. I have to go back and look at the play. But it just reminded me of the shot itself.
I'm assuming that he was not only moving up court when he received that pass, but he was also a few steps beyond where Matt Coleman was.
Yeah, you're probably right. So Texas loses that 4-1 in conference. We'll see how they bounce back against Kansas State on Saturday night at 7 o'clock.
One other thing here. Look, I love the chip that this team plays with on its shoulder, but you need to rein it in a little bit at times, guys. And you pointed this out in pre-show, like the fact that Courtney Ramey's having to be calmed down by Greg Brown. I know Fran and the other analysts were kind of laughing about that and showing the rapport that this team has. And in a sense, I guess I get that. But on the other hand, Courtney Ramey is one of those guys that occasionally just needs to freaking relax and not let something get to him so much. But the most glaring example of that on this roster right now, Chad, is a guy that I've been very complimentary of. He's in that Brock Cunningham mold in that he is willing to do a lot of the blue-collar dirty work for his basketball team. That's Royce Ham.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not a good thing for Royce Ham or his teammates when after every whistle that he's on the court, and usually the whistle's being called because of him, he's having to be calmed down. Like, pick and choose those times where you're so amped up that your teammates need to come over and give you a little squeeze on the shoulders to rub down. It shouldn't be at the end of every whistle.
That's a good point. Texas and Kansas State coming up Saturday night. We've also talked plenty of football today. The good news for you Longhorn fans, Jeff Banks, reports are that he's coming to Texas. And by the way, you want to talk about flexing a little bit with your wallet. Reports are he's going to make $1 million at least all 3 years, and it's going to continue to go up with a 3-year deal. But special teams and tight ends coach there, so you could end up with him. You're probably ending up with, you know, you're ending up with the OC as your new head coach from the Bama staff. How about the O-line coach, too, with Kyle Flood? How about an analyst with A.J. Milwee, who may very well be your quarterback's coach? And now, keep that eye on Pete Golding. The report's coming out. We gave Inside Texas credit earlier. Bobby Burton of Inside Texas threw out the idea that Pete Golding right now might be your favorite for the DC job here, coming from Alabama. So that might be three coaches on the actual staff, four if you want to count Sark, but three coaches from the staff and an analyst that could be coming from Bama.
Honestly, the D-line hire, the Bo Davis hire, I think has pointed to Golding coming in as the DC all along. Even though nobody's been willing to go there necessarily, the fact that they are hiring pieces on the defensive staff tells you that Sark is in very close contact with whoever it is that he wants calling plays for him on defense.
I think that's probably true. So keep your eye on that. And yes, Bill O'Brien looks like he's going to be the next OC at Alabama to fill in for Sarkisian. So all that going on, and nothing official from the university yet on really anybody, on even Flood or any of that. We're telling you what we're hearing, of course, from the insider sites. So just keep in mind there. And now some of the national folks, ESPN and otherwise, CBS and others, are starting to pick up the stories about Kyle Flood and giving the insider sites credit, but no official word yet from UT on anything in the coaching staff other than Steve Sarkisian and the fact that, you know, Stan Drayton's staying. And I guess, is Coach Coleman, has that been made official by the university or not?
Not official. That seems to be the way things are leaning right now, but ultimately I also wouldn't be surprised if he ends up in an analyst role for at least a year.
Okay. Gotcha.
Because again, Sark, as an offensive-minded guy, as the guy who's normally coaching quarterbacks, he's going to have established some pretty good rapport with receivers coaches throughout his time as a coach.
Yeah, I would think so. Coming up, we'll tell you why January 14th matters, including what you should not do with your pet and what you should do when it comes to your sandwiches. Plus, we will keep you updated on everything going on today, including James Harden in Brooklyn and some of the other news and notes. There's a lot of football stuff out there today. Transfers, where guys are going to end up, where coaches are going to end up. We'll get you as much as we can before we are done on the Horn.
Half empty, half full, cup runneth over, horns aplenty, coffers full, we're starting over.
Incredible violin work there. What do you got?
This is Andrew Bird. The song is called Pulaski at Night. Pulaski is a road in Chicago.
Drink up. Woo!
There's one check mark reminding me of a very fond time of my life. This song reminds me of how Justine and I have bonded over Andrew Bird. May have seen him more than any other individual musician throughout our relationship. But also, this song specifically, Chad, is one that helped both of my kids calm down when they were babies and were otherwise inconsolable. So it reminds me of Chicago, reminds me of the love of my life, and then the other loves of my life.
I have, that definitely would make it an honorable mention in this discussion. That could get it right to the top in this discussion. You know I'm into the details. The brush drag across the snare drum at the beginning of that song is masterful.
Yeah, it's one of those little things. I'm glad you noticed it.
That's incredible. I'm a drum freak and a detail freak, so I notice all that stuff when they use the side of the snare or it's a brush work or it's that ability to just literally pull something across the drum and you're hearing the length of it, you're hearing the skin of the drum, and they figure out a way to make that work in the song. And then for that song to change, like from that vibe to where it gets to there, that's really, really well done. Good stuff there. Trey's honorable mention songs today for his one last song. We've already heard what his one last song is. We'll play a little bit of that for you on the way out, the LCD Sound System tune that Trey has picked as his one last song. What one song would you want to hear before leaving Earth? Somebody said, what the hell music is that? And see, there you go, Andrew Bird. Somebody said suggested Both Sides Now by Joni Mitchell. Didn't give us any specific reason, but that's the one that they liked.
And by the way, if you have submitted a song and you would like a copy of the book that I interviewed Mike Ayers about, he has told me that he is willing to send a couple of copies to people. So text in right now. Let me know. I may reach out to you away from the text line to get your address so that we can get you one of those books.
Very cool. There you go. All right. We've got a lot of stuff going on in football, coaching updates, transfer updates coming up. But right now, let's tell you why Jan 14 matters.
This hour brought to you by Sinus and Snoring Specialists. Get sinus and snoring relief with Dr. Daniel Slaughter at Sinus and Snoring Specialists, 512-601-0303 or sinussnoringent.com.
All right. This is one of those weird things where sometimes I talk about the pretty people rule and it has its different variations. This, to me, Trey, has its variations. Today is National Dress Up Your Pet Day. I know, and you and I are both very much against this practice. But would you agree with me that any leniency you would give to the dressing up of a pet would depend on the pet's size? Me personally, I am first of all, if you own a domestic cat and you dress it up, I think you're committing abuse.
Oh, you should, not only should that cat be taken away from
that's
you.
That's insane.
Something should go down in your file that keeps you from being allowed to gain another pet. I don't care if it's a goldfish
right,
or a gerbil.
But in the world of dogs, we know dogs can be wonderfully dumb. So if you want to go with a dog, all I'm saying is the bigger the dog, the less it needs clothing. Like, if you want to show me that, look, Chad, my Chihuahua really loves it, and I put her in my purse, and we go out, and she has the little hat, and we put it on, I could almost live with that. But do not tell me that your Newfie needs a sweater. Do not tell me that your Golden needs sunglasses.
There are a lot of people that'll tell you, a Lab or a Golden, that's as good as it gets in terms of dressing up a pet.
No.
I agree with
no.
you, but I'm not willing to give the Paris Hiltons of the world a pass just because they
okay.
have a rat dog.
Oh, I hate them. And you remember, I'm a small dog guy. So the last one we had before this, before the Yorkie, it was a Dachshund.
Yeah.
And my kid bugged me over and over again. We've got to get Harley a hot dog outfit for Halloween. No, we don't.
Can I just say?
No, we don't.
That is the exception to the rule.
No, it's not.
Dressing a wiener dog
no.
up like a hot dog?
No!
Come on, man.
Stop it. On behalf of dachshund owners everywhere, we are going to stand up and we're going to say the dogs are cute enough without putting hot dog costumes on them.
Yeah, even putting the reindeer antlers
oh,
on a dog's head,
geez.
That's almost worse than a sweater because of the pressure that's creating around their skull, and you can see how much they hate it and how embarrassed they are, by the way. Dogs will show you embarrassment.
Yes, that's all I was just about to say. Have you ever looked into the eyes of a dog wearing any kind of clothing and seen happiness? Because I never have. I always just see this blank stare of, my God, if I had thumbs, I'd kill everybody in this room.
A dog that's been dressed up is like, has the look on his or her face of a dad of a family that is being forced to dress up like everybody else to take family pictures.
Yes, exactly. That is it. So National Dress Up Your Pet Day, please don't. Do not. Think twice and then decide not to do that. But the thing that Trey and I would be in favor of today is National Hot Pastrami Sandwich Day. Trey, the beauty of a warm sandwich is one of the great things in the world.
Yeah.
You get that bread toasted just the right way. You get it heated up just the right way. And I'm not, I don't eat pastrami a lot, but if you're going to go with more of that New York style deli kind of sandwich, or hey, maybe should they do it in Chicago, drink up. But anytime you want to go into that world, you heat that up a little bit for me. I'll work a pastrami sandwich now.
They do the hot beef sandwiches in Chicago. But yeah, yes. I'm with you. Given the option, I will at least go panini press on any sandwich that I order. But specifically with pastrami, I would much rather have a hot pastrami sandwich than a cold. Like turkey sandwich, I could do cold turkey sandwich.
Oh,
that's
yeah,
not
that's
a problem.
Fine. That's fine.
Pastrami, yeah, I feel like it needs to be hot more than some of the other sandwich meat options.
Yeah, hot sandwich, a good idea. Hot sandwich is a good idea. What about grilled cheese? You into that? Were you that for a kid? Just good basic grilled cheese growing up?
Oh, yeah, I ate some grilled cheese as a kid. I don't eat a ton as an adult necessarily, but that turns into a lot of work, too.
It does.
You're having to butter bread and throw it in the pan for a little bit.
That's one reason why, for my waistline, it's been good that I haven't seen my mother in almost a year. But one thing she does well is she'll get the grilled cheese, and then she'll ask you, well, do you want some meat in there? I'm like, yeah.
Yes.
So you'll do, like, she'll offer you, like, we got ham, I got turkey. So do, like, a ham and turkey in the grilled cheese sandwich. Dude, it's so good.
For whatever reason, and I normally like tomatoes on my sandwiches, if I can do a grilled cheese and it has a tomato element, too, that has also been grilled, I'm not always a fan of cooked tomatoes because it makes the tomato a bit more acidic. But I love it in a grilled cheese.
By the way, you'll be proud of me. This weight loss thing where I'm trying to maintain this, it has changed some of my taste bud situations. I now appreciate pickles on burgers and sandwiches more than I used to.
Oh, I am so proud.
I am appreciating the pickle in a way I never have before, Trey.
That's good.
Just telling you.
Do you have a preference on the type of pickle, just straight up dill?
Oh, I'm not there yet. I have no clue. No, half the time, I don't even know what I'm eating. I'm just telling you, I'm not taking pickles off, and I'm actually enjoying it now.
Well, let me just go ahead and fill you in.
Is it a dill?
You're
a dill guy?
You're a fan of the dill.
Okay.
You will not like bread and butter because bread and butter shouldn't be called pickles. I don't know what they should be called, but it's vile.
There's a kind of pickle called bread and butter pickles?
Bread and butter pickles, yes.
That sounds gross.
It's not good.
This doesn't sound right. On the birthday front today, a lot of music, since we're talking about one last song. T-Bone Burnett has a birthday today.
Yeah, legend.
He's been involved in a lot of cool stuff over the years, including, you know, being Bob Dylan's guitar player. Like, that's kind of a cool thing to say you were.
Oh, I never realized that.
Yeah, back in the 70s. And that's something I just learned recently. He, in the 70s, was in the Dylan's band, and then he's gone on to produce stuff, and he's done all kinds of great stuff. Jeff Tate of Queensryche. I'm a metalhead, so I'll throw his name in. LL Cool J has a birthday today. And Dave Grohl is 52 years old.
Dave.
How about this, Trey? Dave Grohl and Jason Bateman were born on the exact same day. They are,
okay.
They are both 52 today. So
I like
same
both,
birthday.
I like both of their work a lot. I probably like Bateman a little bit more, though, if I'm being perfectly honest.
I would agree with that.
Foo Fighters sounds, a lot of their stuff sounds very similar.
I would agree with that, too. But it's a band I want to see live.
But I have a ton of respect for him.
Yeah. God, that has to be a good show.
Yeah.
I love Dave, yeah, and his just historic look at music, I love that.
And his willingness to collaborate with people.
Yep.
Like, I love that, too. He really is the penultimate example of a rock star in 2021. He's just that guy. He's just got the cool about him. He obviously fronts a very popular band. You know, his willingness to reach out to others, to work with others. Dave Grohl is just the king of cool.
He is very, very cool. Yeah, Jason Bateman, you and I both got into Ozark. We did some podcast breakdowns of Ozark on the show. I guess last year now, technically.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Bateman's done a lot of great stuff. I've never seen, what is it, the one everybody tells me to watch?
Game Night?
Game Night. Never seen it.
Oh, man.
Heard it's awesome.
It's one of my favorite comedies from the last 2 or 3 years, however long it's been out now.
On the serious side, have you ever seen This Is Where I Leave You? When Jane Fonda plays his mom?
No.
Good one. Tina Fey's in it. Tina Fey's his sister, and Adam Driver's his brother.
Oh, okay. That's a superstar cast.
And the story is, it's the family coming home to, let's see if I get this right, to sit Shiva after dad dies.
Huh.
That's the start of it.
Did you see The Outsider, the show that he was in several episodes and also directed?
Yeah.
Was it good?
He was great. Oh, it was great. And I'm not really, you know me, I'm not a Stephen King-y kind of guy, generally. It's a Stephen King story. Bateman's in it for like, I'm not going to ruin it, but he's not in the whole run. He's in it for a little bit. But man, it's good. Yeah, really good. Really, really, really good.
Another Bateman movie that's from fairly recent, although I guess it's close to 5 years old now, Office Christmas Party.
Still haven't seen that?
That will eventually make it to the list of people's favorite Christmas movies. It's funny. I watched it again a couple weeks ago.
Bad Bosses is good.
Horrible Bosses?
I mean, Horrible Bosses.
Yep, that was the other one I was going to suggest.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, of course, Arrested Development.
Yeah.
One of the all-time great TV shows.
Oh, my God. Arrested Development. Yep. Kevin Dunn says it all the time, and he's right every time he says it. That pilot is one of the best pieces of television anybody's ever made.
Mm-hmm.
And I also agree with what Brandon Lang said on our show today, that the Cobra Kai episode that contains Elizabeth Shue, spoiler alert, is one of the greatest pieces of television ever made.
That was a great episode.
It was fantastic. Yeah. I sat back just in awe with a big old Joker smile on my face for like an hour contemplating what I'd just seen.
Mm-hmm.
It was fantastic. So that's why January 14th matters to us. If you're a Texas fan, it should matter because you're hearing more and more big names that could be on this coaching staff with Steve Sarkisian. Are they his buddies from Alabama? Yeah, technically they are. But you're also taking stuff away from Alabama. And on behalf of a fan of a team in their division, I'd like to thank you for that, Steve Sarkisian. Before we get out of here, more stems and seeds, including a name you know that's going to be an OC at a school you probably don't care about. But their head coach is also a guy you know. I'll give you that weird connection. Plus, we've got a former Big 12 tight end that's going to end up at a Texas college. A little unexpected story there. All of that, plus some news out of the NFL where some coaches are going and some coaches are leaving. Stay with us. It's the Horn. Vocals. What you got, Trey?
If the stars don't shine, if the moon won't rise, if I never see the setting sun.
This is Penny and the Quarters. That's the name of the band.
That's
great.
The
song is called You and Me. It was the song that Justine and I had our first dance to when we got married back in 2013.
There you go. That'll do it. Trey's honorable mentions for one last song before we get out of here. We'll play his actual one last song.
By the way, my other honorable mention that I did not get to play because I was just spacing out and didn't have anything pulled up, so I panicked and went with LCD Sound System, is Billy Joel, Piano Man.
Ah, okay. So you did have one like standard poppy kind of song in there.
I did.
Look at you. I knew you had it in you somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was going to be in there.
And otherwise, it's pretty melancholy, I'm realizing. I've got a very melancholy theme to the songs that I'm selecting.
And the fact that that's the one that you ended up forgetting to play in a way. That's you to a T. That's perfect.
Very music snob of me, isn't it?
Very music snob of you, sir. All right, we'll get you some more of that. We'll play a little bit of Trey's actual one last song coming up before the show is done as we go out. Tomorrow, I'll get you some of my honorable mentions throughout the show, and we'll tell you what my one last song is at 2 o'clock. And Trey, you do have a couple people texting in that they would like one of the books. So definitely you check that out on the text line.
Perfect. I will reach out to you after the show and have you email me your information, and the book will be in the mail.
Thanks for that. And let's get into stems and seeds and talk coaching.
No stress, no seeds, no stems, no sticks.
That's at least where it'll start. Brought to you by AV Consultations. AV Consultations is 255-8678, or go to avconsultations.com. That audiovisual dream can come true for you. A couple of pro stories first. Pittsburgh has decided three coaches are gone. OC Randy Fickner is out. O-line coach Sean Sarrett is out. Now, that technically their contract's just ended. And then the DB's coach, Tom Bradley, will not be coming back. So the Steelers need a new OC and O-line coach for Ben Roethlisberger. Keep your eyes peeled for that. And Trey, apparently it is going to happen. Jacksonville is going to go with Urban Meyer. Urban renewal. Trevor Lawrence probably with the number one pick. It's going to be a fascinating story. Houston Texans fans, this is now walking into your division.
Incredible.
Whoa.
Just incredible. And I don't blame Urban Meyer. If he really does have health issues that he's concerned about, going someplace like Jacksonville. Because let's be honest, Jacksonville as a pressure cooker versus someplace like Texas or Notre Dame,
right,
where not only are you having to deal with the ire of many more fans, but also the year-round beatdown that is recruiting, sucking up to 17- and 18-year-old kids, a year-round process now, I get why he would jump to the league.
Plus, he's not going to a bigger media market in the NFL. He's not going to, like, the Crusher in New York.
That's part of it.
Right?
Yeah, if you're signing up to be the Cowboys' next coach or the Giants' next coach,
yeah,
or one of these long-established teams, even the Bears.
Well,
although,
the Jets is the one I always think of. That's a tough gig media-wise.
Is the Jets? I feel like the pressure is off of you because they've been bad for so long.
Maybe that is.
But you might be right about that. I mean, it certainly is New York. But Jacksonville is one of the tamer media environments for an NFL coach.
So what we have to, what you have to hope if you're following Jacksonville, if you're rooting for Urban Meyer or whatever, it needs to feel like Jimmy Johnson. Now, he didn't come right from coaching, but it hadn't been that long since he won a national title. And he's been sitting there, Trey. He hadn't been sitting beside a lake, you know, playing crossword puzzles. He's been studying the game. You watch that Fox show. That man is still involved in football. So now he can go to a draft room, and he knows these kids.
Yep.
He knows them on an intimate football level, and he's probably going with Trevor Lawrence to start building things around. That is a hell of a story. And that division, if the Texans can just kind of deal with their drama, all four of those teams are interesting.
I can't
forward.
Wait to see what Indy does at the quarterback position this offseason. I feel like they are going to push to bring somebody else in. It seems like Phillip Rivers may be on the way out. I don't think Jacoby Brissett is the answer, although I think he is better than what some people give him credit for. He played last season with a pretty serious knee injury, played through it, but it affected his performance. I want to see what they do at quarterback because they could be the next great team in the NFL.
All right, Trey, how about the return of Rich Rod? Rich Rodriguez has a gig. He will be the OC at ULM, Louisiana Monroe. His son is transferring from Arizona to ULM. His name is Rhett, by the way. Rhett Rodriguez.
Rhett Rod. Come on, Rich.
That's his son, Rhett Rod. That'll be the quarterback, at least for a year. And I forgot this. The new ULM head coach? Why, that'd be Terry Bowden, ladies and gentlemen.
What?
Terry Bowden, Trey, for the last 2 years, has been hanging with Dabo as a GA. What is that, like a 60-year-old GA? A GA at Clemson. Now he's going to go to ULM, and Rich Rod is his OC.
Good for him for just taking a plush gig like that. Like, he's obviously made enough money in coaching and broadcasting that he could take a job like that and be affiliated with that program.
Yeah.
And maybe it rubs off on him, maybe it doesn't, but eventually turn it into something more if you want to.
Yep. I love it. I mean, that at least makes me peek in on ULM occasionally, which I wasn't going to do. Another name people might know, remember, Trey, Grant Calcaterra, the tight end that was at OU, had concussion issues, but they think he's going to be able to play, was going to go to Auburn, but they, of course, changed coaches. He wasn't comfortable with Harsin. He's going to SMU. Going to go hang with his teammate from Oklahoma, Tanner Mordecai, who just transferred. So Coach Dykes gets a pretty damn good tight end. If that kid's healthy, he's good.
Calcaterra is a good player when he's healthy. You just always hold your breath when you hear a guy is being forced to retire because of concussion issues but decides to get it going someplace else. Hopefully that does not end poorly for him.
Also, you've probably heard Jim Harbaugh got a 4-year extension at Michigan. He's bringing an old running back to coach the running backs. Mike Hart, who's been at Indiana the last 4 years, will do that. All right, Triple Option coming up next, then Longhorn Weekly with Shaka Smart. Have a good Thursday. Here's some of Trey's one last song, LCD Sound System. Y'all have a good one. See ya!